I'm John Batchelor with my colleague, Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS News. U.S. Army retired artillerymen. We come to the period following the fall of the Soviet Union and the Russian Federation reinvention. A man named Yeltsin is president, and yet the numbers of tactical nuclear weapons on the Russian sides remain very high. We're going to first speak to NATO's ambition. NATO has, at this point, I believe, 28 members. And those 28 members, maybe less, the number has moved around since the end of the Soviet Union, have to agree about policy. And NATO had a policy called deterrence and defense posture review that was very important to them. The White House, eventually under Barack Obama, had a policy of global zero. Between DDPR and global zero, there was a lot of talk among our allies. And Jeff, we need to attend to our allies here because NATO at this point was understood as a glue of a very successful defense strategy. The Soviets go away. So does the glue still work? And one of the salient points I learned from your presentation in this book is that NATO sees nuclear weapons policy, especially tactical nuclear weapons, as a way of holding NATO together, as a form of Atlanticism. Do I say that correctly, Colonel?
No, I think that's correct, John. Of course, the question was deterring what? And if the Russian Soviet Union had gone away, was Russia still a threat? And that raised a lot of disquiet in NATO about how many of these particular weapons we needed to have. Europeans, for a long period of time, had mixed feelings in many places about nuclear weapons on their territory. And one important thing that we only touched on slightly was the whole intermediate nuclear forces disagreement when the Russians created an SS-20 missile, and as a response, the United States deployed the Pershing II and the ground-launched cruise missiles in the 1980s. Massive demonstrations in many of our allied countries against that. Those particular weapons were eliminated by a treaty called the INF Treaty between the United States and the Soviet Union, which the Trump administration recently abrogated. At the end of the Cold War as well, you had a thing called the PNI, the Presidential Nuclear Initiative, and this was individual actions by both President Bush and President Gorbachev. It was an interesting agreement. It wasn't a treaty. It was just parallel action on both sides to dramatically reduce the tactical nuclear weapons in Europe. The United States went down to about 500. Those all gravity bombs to be delivered by short-legged airplanes, but still having weapons positioned in Germany, Holland, Belgium, Italy, and Turkey. And the Russians also reducing their stockpile significantly, but clearly not anywhere close to ours. They still maintained a large number. And their argument was sort of the reverse of what we had argued about in the early part of the NATO days. They needed to maintain these tactical weapons against a hedge against what they viewed as a far more powerful now NATO conventional force that might someday, sometime, threaten the Russian Federation.
Yes, let's look at our allies. First, the French, I learned, were sensitive to any weakening of nuclear posture. The Germans, on the other side, insisted that arms control take the lead. Our central and eastern members of NATO and those aspiring to be members of NATO remained during the 1990s exceedingly suspicious of Russia and Moscow. And to knit all these things together is impossible. So what we have here is the Allies disagree about the tactical nuclear weapon. And I take it that continued through the 90s into the 21st century, Colonel.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, the French, of course, like the British, created their own strategic nuclear, their own independent strategic nuclear forces. And the French in particular, because for a long period of time, they were not part of the NATO military wing, created their own tactical nuclear forces. We know that they created a tactical warhead for a shorter range missile called the Pluton. There was some discussion, I know, in the French military during the 1980s, for example, of perhaps miniaturization down to creating an artillery shell that could fire a nuclear weapon. So the French were always very independent in their thinking, the force de frappe, that France would have an independent decision on escalation to use nuclear weapons. And then secondly, if you're right about the Germans, even insisted on, when we started talking about deployment of intermediate nuclear forces, INF forces, to counter the Soviet SS-20, they demanded a so-called two-track decision, that we would go down two tracks in parallel. One would be a modernization and expansion of the forces available to NATO. That was ground-launched cruise missiles and Pershing II. But that was only going to be acceptable to Germany, who's going to host a large number of these weapons on their territory, if we had an arms control negotiation in parallel.
What we have here is a moving story into the 21st century, and Global Zero is where this book in 2012 ends.
Well, the Global Zero was the whole idea of eliminating the possibility of nuclear weapons, which has been a large number of countries have seen that as a goal. There's an ongoing effort by particularly countries in the third world to ban all nuclear weapons in an agreement, which still has not gotten ratified. So it was an aspiration, but it was an aspiration during a period of time when we hoped that the Russian Federation and the West would find some accommodation. And sadly, we all know with the invasion of Ukraine in 2022, right, that possibility is gone.
Tactical nuclear weapons in NATO. Colonel Jeff McCausland, when we come back, the Russian point of view. I'm John Mack.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.